Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, March 15th. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our show today will inform, inspire, and encourage you. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, Color Your Life Happy, Your Mental Health Matters. But first, I want to welcome you, all of my listeners, because I know you have many other things you could be doing with your time. I'm so honored that you chose to spend it with me. I encourage you to participate by asking questions or adding comments. You can do that two ways. If you're on the phone lines, just press the 1 to let me know you have a question or a comment. If you're over in the chat room, type in your questions or your comments, and I'll be able to see them and read them on the air. Let me remind you that the show is live, so that means anything can happen. Lost signals is the most common thing that happens. This even happened to me. So if your call is suddenly lost, just dial in again at 347-539-5700, the same number you called before. And don't worry about missing anything because all the shows are recorded and available for you later under on-demand episodes on my show page. Again, I am Flora Brown. I'm an author, coach, inspirational speaker, consultant, and a mom of 4. Yes, I have 4 adult children, and I'm a grandma of 3. Geez, my grandchildren are adults practically. And I recently retired after 40 years of teaching junior high through university levels, so I have definitely been on the front lines in many respects. I invite you to visit my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, right away after the show because I have created 2 new exciting programs for you. The first one is an opportunity for people who live in Orange County locally, any of you residents or even L.A. County residents, who are ready to come out of hiding and live your life to its fullest, well, I have a program for you that I'm calling From Overwhelmed to Overjoyed, Creating the Life You Want. Now, this is going to be an in-person meeting. We're going to meet the 4th Thursday at 6 p.m. starting March 25th in Orange County. And to sign up, you can either just go to my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, and right in the center there, you'll see the sign-up link if you're interested in getting out of overwhelm and getting into overjoy. The second opportunity is available to everyone, no matter where you are, and this is an opportunity to participate in the celebration of our first year anniversary. Yes, this radio show has been on the air for a year, and on the main page of my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, sign up now for the drawing. I'm going to be giving away prizes throughout the Monday, March 29th show. That's going to be our celebration show. There will be other fun activities there on the day of the show, too. So mark your calendars right now for Monday, March 29th, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, when you sign up for the drawing, you don't have to be on the air at the time to be a winner, but you will want to be on the air for some other things we're going to be doing. So I encourage you, go over to my website now, sign up for the drawing, and also if you are local and want to be a part of this once-a-month in-person meeting, sign up for that too. Now, on our radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. Now, in order to do that, each week I interview guests from fields such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, wealth creation, career, you name it. We talk about a wide variety of things here because all of those things contribute to your lasting happiness. Today, my guest is Nicole Spivey, a a marriage and family therapist. Hi, Nicole.
Hi there. How are you?
I am great. I'm so glad that you were able to join us. And we're going to get started in a minute, but first I want to tell the listeners a bit about you before we begin. Is that okay?
Oh, yes. Feel free.
Okay. Now, Nicole has worked in the mental health field for 4 years, and she has experience in working with clients in the substance abuse and severely mentally retarded, mentally ill. That's retarded is not a good word, is it? Mentally ill populations. After returning to graduate school and receiving her MA, her Master of Arts degree in clinical psychology in the May of 2009, that's not too long ago, huh? She interns now as a marriage and family therapist at a community mental health agency specializing in servicing children whose parents are in substance in recovery by providing individual, family, and group therapy services. This is very important. So you're working with the children whose parents are involved in the substance recovery program. Now, her long-term goal is to be a mental health advocate in minority communities in order to reduce the negative stigma that's attached to seeking out mental health services. Now, she's a firm believer in the power of good mental health. She likes to provide a platform that promotes the importance of these four words, your mental health matters. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about starting right now. Now, Nicole, welcome again.
Yes. Thank you so much. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
You're most welcome. I want to start off by asking you to tell us what inspired you to enter this field, because you're fairly new to the field, so you had a lot of options. And what led you to choose this particular field?
Well, it was a combination of a couple of things. As a child, I always knew that I was kind of an encourager, kind of a natural-born encourager. You know, I was that kid on the sports teams because I enjoyed rooting the team on, not so much the athletic part. I was actually a pretty mediocre athlete, was always a great cheerleader. And as I grew older and began to deal with life's up and downs, those experiences allowed me to gain some empathy and compassion for those who struggle and need a little lift. And I began to do it just naturally in my various professional settings. And so in 2006, I decided to work in the mental health field full-time and return to graduate school. So here I am.
Well, that's wonderful. And in your bio, I talked about your desire to be a mental health advocate for minority communities. Can you talk a little bit about that? What does that mean, and what would you be doing in that capacity?
As an advocate, I would continue the work that I'm doing as far as being a therapist, but also really engaging myself in the community, doing some speaking events, just making mental health more visible. Because minority communities kind of have a negative view of mental health services and often feel embarrassed or ashamed to seek out help. You know, they are concerned that they're going to be called crazy, and these communities are often more accepting of social services such as welfare or housing. And so as a therapist, I really want to change the view and the perception, negative perception of mental health services. And, you know, one thing I'd like to say is when we're sick, we seek medical attention, because if we're not physically okay, it interferes with our ability to function in our daily lives. And if we continue to ignore the physical problem, it becomes a chronic issue too devastating to repair. And so I want to let people know that your mental health is just as crucial to your viability as your physical health.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things then that I hear you saying, and I know from my experience is very true, is that you want to help remove that stigma, because if someone needs help, desperately needs help, and doesn't seek it, it's a shame, and it's unfortunate, because there's absolutely no way that they are going to get better on their own if they are in dire need of help. But seeking it is extremely important, and I know from my own experiences growing up in the inner city, that you're right, that for physical health, we don't hesitate, even for a cold.
Mm-hmm,
we don't
exactly.
hesitate to go to the doctor for just a cold. And yet for mental health issues, we definitely don't want to give any impression there. Unfortunately, we've grown up thinking that you're crazy and no one wants to admit that. And
exactly.
Also, I would suspect, too, that there's the problem of the just like the error I made in during your introduction when I said mentally retarded instead of mentally ill. Do you
mm-hmm.
find that people confuse those two if they're having mental illness problems, that they are afraid that it'll be taken as some type of retardation or something as well?
Sometimes. That's not too often, but just, you know, when people are mentally ill, they take it as the extreme. You know, sometimes we all go through some form of mental illness at some point in our lives. You know, if a person were to look into our lives and just pick one little point in our lives and just judge us from that one little point, we may not have been in the best place. And so there's a broad spectrum. You know, I have dealt with a severely mentally ill population, which is one extreme, but, you know, there are so many different levels that can interfere with the way that we function. And just as, you know, you said that we go to the doctor for a cold or a flu, you know, let's go seek out mental health services at the cold or flu level. You know, it'd be
yeah.
much more productive at that level.
Can you give us an example of a mental health issue that is at the cold or flu level that we could recognize so we know that we need to go and seek help? Can you think of an example from your experience?
An example of at the cold or flu level might be mild to moderate depression. A person is just really struggling with interpersonal relationships. They're feeling kind of sad all the time. They're sleeping a little more than they used to. They're eating a little more, a little less than they used to. So at that level, really gaining the support from a therapist would be beneficial, and recovery is going to be much more swift versus, you know, the person is having suicidal thoughts or thinking of ending their lives. So that's kind of like the ER level of that same issue. So
yeah.
we want to put it in, you know, just you're going to the doctor real quick, you know, you're getting a fix and you'll be okay.
Wow. Now, when a person does go to a therapist, what can this patient, this client expect out of the therapy? What can we expect out of therapy?
Well, therapists have various what we call theoretical orientations that we operate out of. My particular orientation is cognitive behavioral. I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist. And basically what I believe is our actions are driven by our conscious and subconscious thoughts. And if we believe certain things to be true in our lives, they are true. So as a therapist, I address the client's automatic negative thoughts, and that's another cognitive behavioral term. And what that means is those things that reside in our minds, those negative things, dictate our actions. And a lot of times it's called automatic negative thoughts because we don't even realize that we're doing it. For instance, you know, let's say I look like Halle Berry, which I don't, but let's just say I look like Halle Berry. And I have the automatic thought, an automatic negative thought that I'm ugly. Oftentimes the root of that thought could have been born out of my childhood. I could have been told that. I could have been teased by, you know, various children or, you know, various family members. And so it could be born out of one small experience. It could be born out of a multitude of experiences. But what happens over time is that thought, we forget what the root is,
right,
and we continue on with the automatic negative thought. So it kind of it becomes a part of who we are. So as a therapist, I don't really spend a lot of time. I do like to know what the root is. But once I know what the root is, I want to move back into the present and onward into the future by changing that automatic negative thought into more positive and realistic ones.
So I was going to next ask you, what kinds of things can negatively affect our mental health. And it sounds like one of the issues, the big issue, is the automatic negative thoughts. What are some other things that can negatively affect our mental health?
Stress is definitely a big one. It can be stress on your job. It can be personal stress. It kind of wears on us. It wears on our spirit. A lack of rest or sleep can also be something that interferes with your mental health. A lot of times you're a little more irritable, you know, not so alert, and, you know, things just get on your nerves. Poor eating habits. You know, I know I'm cranky when, you know, I'm not eating enough. All my friends know this. Or it could just be eating the wrong foods, like,
wrong stuff,
you know,
yeah,
filling up on sugar or filling up on caffeine. All those things can impact your mental health, and that's something, you know, that I really want people to recognize.
Yeah. That's, you know, it's so extremely important what you're saying about the stress, the lack of sleep or rest, the eating habits. These are things that we could, if we realize how important they are, these are things we can easily make changes to help ourselves. But I don't think people realize enough how much they...
Yes, I don't necessarily think they realize that. And, you know, those are some physical things. And a lot of times, you know, we're seeing that on a physical level, but we're not paying attention to the root, which can often be a mental health issue.
Right. Okay. Now, how can poor mental health impact the quality of life, which is what we all want to have, or we imagine everyone wants to have a good, positive, healthy quality of life? How does our mental health affect that?
Mental health can affect the quality of life in a variety of ways. A lot of times it manifests as anxiety or depression. Basically, in layman's terms, what that means is, you know, a lot of times when you're not mentally well, feeling well, you have a lack of interest in the things that you once enjoyed. You may begin to isolate from friends and family. You might be tearful. You might be crying a lot. You might have a poor appetite. And financially, it can also have an impact. You might have poor spending habits. You know, a lot of times, you know, we as women and sometimes men too may engage in retail therapy. Have you done that?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, but that, you know, you know, it helps in the moment. It's kind of like a quick fix, you know, kind of like when you're...
We become morose after that.
Exactly. So, yes, financially that could potentially be devastating. And also just, you know, another financial issue is the lack of motivation to perform effectively at your job. And, you know, in this economy, unfortunately, there's not a lot of space to kind of, quote unquote, slack off.
That's,
you know,
right.
So if you're going,
right,
yeah, if you're going through a hard time, there's a chance you could be laid off, and that's a big deal.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that, and I find that even if you are self-employed,
mm-hmm,
or maybe especially if you're self-employed, if you are not taking care of your mental health issues, then you aren't going to have, as you just said, the energy, the desire, the interest to do what you need to do to make the money in your business. And consequently, that's going to affect everything because you're not going to get the orders or the clients or the whatever, the sales, whatever business you're in. And then that's going to change your finances, which is going to affect your family relations if your family is depending on you to support them. So it just snowballs and it just becomes this domino effect. It's going to bing, 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 bing affect
exactly
everything.
And right. And, you know, you mentioned the key word is it affects your relationships. I mean, it's wonderful to have things, you know, and money and cars and homes, but, you know, the heart of, you know, true living, the joy, the way that, as you would say, you color your life happy, is through healthy relationships, you know? You really need those in your life.
Yeah. That the healthy relationship is one of those things I think people take for granted will happen if they have some of these other things in place, but the mental health is the key. Now, I've heard that mental health can also affect your physical health. Could you elaborate on that part of it?
Yes, definitely. And this is actually a big one. When we feel physically ill, a lot of times we're sensitive. You know, we don't want to be around people. We can be cranky or irritable, and we may not eat or sleep well. And so this would be an example of your physical health affecting your mental health. And we might feel anxious about being sick and experience some financial stressors from missed work. Poor mental health can be devastating to one's physical health. If we are dealing with depression or anxiety, it can often lower our resistance to getting physically ill. And it can decrease or lower the level of activity and cause us to overeat or not eat enough. A lot of times when we're stressed, we don't sleep well. And this also lowers our resistance to fight disease and illness. So at the end of the day, your mental health issues will take a physical toll on our body. It's not a question or, you know, I wonder if. It's definitely a will. It will.
Wow. That part about the mental health lowering our resistance to disease and illness is just amazing that it affects your immune system. You can't fight back. I notice that when I'm tired, in the days when I let myself get too tired, it would be so easy to catch the flu, catch colds, and so forth. But this is not a, like you say, it's not an if thing. It's a definite thing that if we allow ourselves to either get physically tired or allow ourselves to suffer from mental health issues, it will affect our physical health. And
exactly.
It's hard to come back from some of those if we don't even realize what we're doing that got us there.
Exactly. So, sometimes we'll be wondering. And, you know, sometimes we will be operating at such a chronic level of stress that we don't even realize that we're stressed until we're not. You know, and I mean, there have been times personally where I've been at that point in my life where I'm just like, oh, and then I get a little breather and I'm like, wow, I feel really, really, really good. So, you know, none of us is immune to feeling that way. So, it's, you know, we want to, like, as we talked about earlier, is we want to address it at the cold and flu level. We don't want to address it at the, you know, undying level.
I like your example of saying let's address it at the cold and flu level because there are different levels, and it would be so wonderful if we could spot these things early on and do something. Now, what kind of suggestions can you make to the listeners or to your clients when you work with them to improve our mental health? What kind of suggestions could you make?
As a therapist, I definitely recommend therapy. And in recommending therapy, I'll say sometimes, you know, when you go to the doctor or if you need a certain service, let's say you go to a lawyer or you're going to get your hair done, a lot of times you have to make sure it's a good fit. You know, not all therapists are going to be a good fit for what you need. So just as, you know, they are kind of interviewing you in that first couple of sessions and kind of seeing where you're at, I think it's really important for people to take a hold of their power and ask them questions like, how do you do therapy? What can I expect out of therapy? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, you know, I've heard friends, I've heard family say, oh, I tried a therapist and, you know, it really didn't work out, and really make a judgment about all therapists based on that one.
That
yes.
gives me a, oh, excuse me, go ahead. I was going to ask
no,
you next.
Go.
You can throw this answer in there. To tell the listeners how to begin to go about finding a therapist, but go ahead and give us more suggestions, if you will. Thank you.
Okay. Another way is building personal relationships. Really, you know, by building personal relationships, by interacting with people on an interpersonal level, and I don't mean Facebook or MySpace. you know, I mean actually physically seeing people.
Ooh.
or picking up the phone and calling them.
In the flesh,
them.
Huh?
In the flesh.
Oh, my gosh.
In the flesh, in the voice. It's so important. You know, there's actually research that shows that, you know, physical affection can actually boost your immune response as well as your mental health because of the hormones that it releases when you are in physical contact with other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have lost that sense in a way. I mean, yes, we live in a world of convenience where, you know, it's great to be able to text someone if you're in a meeting. You know, we're ultimate multitaskers. But sometimes you have to put the multitasking down and just,
sure.
you know, sit down with someone, have dinner, have coffee, you know, go dancing. It's so important, which leads me into the next one of just having a social life. You know, having balance is so important. The workaholic, I mean, that's great, but, you know, work can't really work, I guess, for some people can be your friend, but sometimes it can't be the friend that you need. So really, you know, building that social network, having a social life. One of my favorites is me time. Mm. Love me time. Sometimes you just need a timeout. You know, you need rest. You need no TV, no radio, no nothing, just time to think and time to reflect on maybe some of the things that you're dealing with. And then another one is keeping good boundaries. Mm. A lot of times, you know, it's difficult for us to say no, but we, you know, run ourselves into the ground. And again, you know, I'm a guilty party. You know, I'm not.
So
you know,
am I.
I'm. Yes, I'm the choir and I'm preaching to it. So, so yes, just knowing when to say no and. You know, finding, just exercising self-preservation. And what I mean by self-preservation is really being able to find the balance between selfishness and selflessness. You know, in such a delicate balance, you know, you don't want to just cut yourself off from the world and you're like, I'm not going to help you with anything or help anyone. And you don't want to be totally selfless to the point where you're exhausted all the time and you don't have any energy. For yourself.
Right,
you know,
right.
A lot of times when you take time to fill yourself up and you're charged, it kind of runs over to the people around you, and all you have to do is just be a light to those people. So, yeah, self-preservation. And another one that I find very, very important is limiting exposure to negative stimuli. An example would be watching the news. We all love to watch the news, you know, see what's going on. My favorite part's the weather. But I found, is it going to be sunny or rainy? It's Southern California, sunny or rainy. Huh, which one?
That could be negative, too, if it's storming and you're starting to get anxious about your weather in your area. That could be negative. But,
that's very true. That's very true, just kind of like, is it going to rain? Is my commute going to be 3 hours instead of 30 minutes? But, a lot of times negative stimuli, you know, watching certain things or listening to certain things can really have an impact on the way that we feel, you know, if we allow it to. So, I really think that's important to limit that. You know, I know, you know, when I'm a therapist, you know, I have my days. And so sometimes I just have to go home and not watch the news because it's just, you know, it's just filled with a lot of times sadness and, you know, it's for the sensationalism and for the ratings, but, you know, it'd be nice to see some, you know, heartfelt, happy, warm stories every now and then. Another big one is regular exercise. And, you know, I say this because, you know, especially if you're dealing with mild depression, exercise can kind of snap you right out of that. Because what happens is your body actually releases something, a couple hormones, serotonin being one of them, dopamine being another. And these are feel-good hormones. They just naturally make you feel good. And a lot of your SSRIs or your antidepressants, those things are in them, and that's what makes you feel better. So
that's what
you
discovered.
Yeah,
when I
exactly.
talked to the doctor, I thought, okay, so I can take serotonin or I can get out and walk and exercise and get it, either way.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, it's so crucial. It just makes you feel good. You physically feel better. You're in better shape. Your health is better. There's so many benefits. You know, but one of the big ones that people overlook is the mental health benefit of exercise. I mean,
exactly.
It's really, you know, it's not in our heads. It's true. So I'm glad to hear that you exercise, Dr. Brown. That's,
yeah, well, you
that's
know
great.
What? Don't get too excited. Let me clarify my exercise. I do have a plan to get out and walk every day, well, about 6 days a week with one of my neighbors. And we've been very good about it. Matter of fact, we started walking a year ago around the same time as my radio show is when I started walking with her. And we're pretty good about it. But we do have days when things come up, like tomorrow morning I have an early meeting. And so we're not going to walk because we walk about 6:30 to 7:30. Usually we're back by 8. And I do it for not the weight loss, although that's a wonderful goal, but I do it because of the mental health side of it. We get out there. She's walking her dog. I'm walking along with her. So we're not really keeping up a rigorous, we're not doing any preparation for the marathon or anything. But
mm-hmm.
it's important for us mental health-wise, and it's also social. I mean, you know, we talk to each other, we catch up on what's going on, and it's a relationship of a type. It's kind of a timeout because neither of us can do our other stuff while we're walking.
Mm-hmm.
You're communing with nature, you're observing, and you get to know your neighborhood. You know, I have met more neighbors since I've been walking than the whole 19 years before that I've been living here, because you greet people, and it's really a tremendous thing mentally. I stress that more than the physical exercise of it, getting out. Then I love to walk, and just walking and looking is just so important. So yeah, thank you. I do pat myself on the back for getting out there and doing it. But I realized the need last year when I was writing my book, when I was finishing up my book.
Mm-hmm.
I realized the need so much because I would spend hours and hours and hours writing, and that was great, but I would just hit a wall sometimes where I felt like, oh, I just needed to get up and out. You know, even if I didn't do anything but walk around, I live on one of those long, triple long blocks, just walk all the way around that. It's just very important.
That is excellent to hear. See, listeners, this is an excellent example. Dr. Brown's an excellent example of what it means to get out there and exercise and really showing the benefits. I mean, you tied in so many different things as far as, you know, having the, you know, building that interpersonal relationship, having the kind of the social hour, feeling better, you know, having more energy. And that's excellent, and that kind of ties into also good eating habits. You know, as I stated earlier, a lot of times our eating habits can kind of dictate how we feel. When we have too much sugar, too much caffeine, not a good thing. You know, everything in moderation is good. Alcohol, you know, I have a drink every now and then, but everything in moderation. But, however, if you have substance abuse issues, or if you're dealing with something in your life and you're turning to that for anything other than the social aspect, then that's not a good thing. You don't want to turn to the bottle because you're feeling down.
Oh my gosh, no.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's
I
definitely
want to bring in the spiritual as well as another.
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. The spiritual. You touched on it when you were talking about time out and just reflecting. Excuse me. I think sometimes people feel uncertain about the spiritual because they think they have to ascribe to some certain religion in order to be spiritual. But I like to use the term spiritual because it can cover whatever kind of belief you have in terms of getting in touch with the higher being, a higher purpose. And whatever your flavor of religion is fine. But to me, it's one of those things that has to be in there too. Go ahead.
Yes, having a spiritual connection is so important. And there's actually research that shows that when someone has that spiritual connection or support from their religious affiliation, that therapy is even more effective.
Wow.
Because you need that. Yeah, you need that support from the higher being. There's just nothing like it. You know, I attend church, you know, at New Hope Presbyterian, and I have to tell you, just being able to be a part of that congregation and getting that spiritual recharge and having that connection with like-minded people is so important. It's almost like a support group, you know?
Yeah, it is.
You know, you need to be supported.
While you're getting the spiritual food, you also are getting some of those other things you just mentioned, the building personal relationships, and you're exercising a different kind of mental health than some of the other things we've mentioned, but you get a variety of things, and there's no substitute for strengthening and getting refilled with your spiritual life, because when you're not at church or any given spot, you can still tap into it. You can tap into wherever you are. Yeah, as long as you have that option. If you haven't explored that option and developed it, you won't know to use it. And it's
exciting. Yes. Yes, it provides a sense of clarity. It provides a sense of safety. You know, it can be a home base. And I really think that that is important, because your therapist, you know, I'm a therapist, but I have to say that your therapist should not be your everything. You know, your therapist is kind of that person to kind of help you along the way and, you know, to kind of help you fly. So, you know, find those things that help you to fly, that help you to feel supported, and a spiritual community is definitely one of those things.
Oh, you know what? I want to ask you before our time runs out. We have 7 minutes left. Have you had any personal or professional struggles in your own mental health, with your own mental health, where your own health was compromised in some way? And if so, can you tell us briefly how you made it through that period?
Yes. I would like to take you back to high school around 1992-93. There were just a lot of things happening in my personal life. I didn't really have a professional life because I was a child. So, I was just dealing, you know, my parents were going through some struggles. I had lost one of my favorite teachers of all time, Mr. Oppenheim, who's my high school chemistry teacher. He passed away, and one of my best friends. So it's like thing after thing after thing. And I was one of those kids who wasn't very vocal about what was going on with me. I was the kid where everything was always okay. Mm-hmm. And so what eventually happened over time is I began to get physically ill. Mm-hmm. And I was back and forth to the doctor with my mom. They would always say, "We don't know what's wrong with you," blah, 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 blah. So after about 6 months of going back and forth and test after test after test, I ended up in the hospital with 105 fever. They ran some tests. I was burning up, literally. They ran some tests and found that I had mononucleosis, which is actually, you know, in the autoimmune family, which can be brought on by a great degree of stress. So pretty early on in my life, I realized the impact that my stress could have on my physical body, and it created a heightened self-awareness for me and taking care of myself. You know, and there have been times in my life where I've struggled with it, but at least I'm aware, and I know what I need to do to fix it and correct it.
Which gets me to, how do you stay balanced personally and professionally? What do you do?
Well, first off, I have an extremely supportive group of friends, extremely supportive. I have family, and then I have the friends who are like family. A friend of mine said recently at her birthday party, there's a family that you are born with and the family that you choose. So about 4 years ago, I've met a group of people who, you know, are my chosen family and just provide a wealth of knowledge and support and encouragement and wisdom, and I'm so thankful. And they are most likely listening, so, like, thank you.
Oh, cool.
Thank you, guys. Yes. And another thing is I love the job that I do. I work at Shields for Families. That's a community mental health agency I work at. And there are, from time to time, I do have my moments where, you know, I'm a little stressed out. And I think it's important for people to know that in the journey to our greatest passions, which encouragement is mine, there will be time that you're going to struggle and question what you're doing. But if you're aware of the ultimate purpose and outcome, those are just bumps in the road, you know. It's not going to be a perfect journey, but just realize, you know, what's your goal and keep moving. And I do things that I love. I love to sing and dance, and I love to eat. And I'm gonna let you know a little industry secret. This is a big one. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So even therapists need therapy.
Yes.
Yes. There have been times in my life. Yes. You know, for first of all, professionally, some of the things that we take on and listen to daily can, you know, take a toll at times.
Yes.
You know, we need to be strengthened.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, you know, remember that. I mean, you know, I'm not too proud or too bold to say that. I think it's an important key element to being a good and effective therapist.
Well, I think that's
so those
true
are just,
for all professionals. You know, all professionals need a therapist or a coach or a counselor or someone that you can go to and bounce off of, because we all have a lot of issues that come up, and when we're the helpers or we're in a giving profession, there's this mistaken notion that we are supermen. And of course,
exactly.
And we need replenishing too, and that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, we're human.
We're almost near the end of the show. 2 minutes. Do you have
any
words of wisdom for somebody who may be struggling, but they're not quite ready to sit on the therapist's couch?
I would say take time out, pamper yourself, pay attention to warning signs that may be telling you to slow down, find an outlet, change your perception of circumstances. You know, not all negative circumstances are the end of the world, and just find the joy within yourself. So those are some things. Those are just a few of the things that I find important.
That sounds like you've been reading my book, Color Your Life Happy.
Yes, amazing book.
The same things. What if the listeners want to get in touch with you? Do you have an email or something you can give them if they have questions or they want you to point them to some resources?
They can reach me by email. My email is NK. N as in Nicole, K as in Krista, Spivey, S as in Sam, P as in Paul, I, V as in Victor, EY at gmail.com. Again, that's nkspivey at gmail.com. And I would be more than happy to answer any general questions that you may have or be a resource.
Okay. Nkspivey at gmail.com?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I want to thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your expertise and your personal experiences as well with us. I know that the listeners have been enlightened and encouraged. I certainly have. And I hope that the listeners share this with their own family and colleagues, because this is a message of so much importance, and that is to take care of your own mental health matters when they're at the, I like what you said, when they're at the cold and flu level, before they escalate to become severe problems that are so much harder to deal with and to handle. I want to remind everyone, if you didn't know, that you may subscribe to the podcast of this show on iTunes now, so you can go there and take a look. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you, Nicole, for being on the show today.
And, yes, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I know I'm going to have to invite you back because I have some more questions and we didn't finish, so I'm going to invite you another time. I want to invite the listeners to please tune in next Monday, March 22nd. We're going to have another exciting show. Let me remind you to visit my website and color your life happy.
Each day you wake up and get out of bed, you got all these feelings rushing round in your head. You got that bout with doubt and neighbors singing the blues. Pick up the paper and it's all bad news. But you know in the end, happiness is your best friend. You can be what you wanna be. Hard day to step high and live like you're free. I said color. Color your life happy. Color. Every day you can choose. Color. Color your life happy. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
The difference between try and triumph is a little funky. We all have ups and downs, but you can still be happy. If you're gonna step, you might as well step high.
If you choose happy, there's no way you can.